How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation.
When I go to offices to talk about whatever lab I'm representing, I can't tell you how many times they usually go, "I'm just a hygienist. It doesn't matter." And I disagree. I think what we do in a lab plays a huge part on what a hygienist is going to see. And I know most patients get along with their hygienist better. They spend more time with their hygienist. And these are the people that are going to open up about what possible restoration could be done with this patient. It's easy to go into a lunch and learn and just, I can bring you models to the end of the time and just show you night guards, dentures, and everything. But really, what are you looking for in a lab? That's how you should choose your lab. Computers and AI is just getting amazing. A lot of it is getting to a point where it's giving you a really decent mock-up, and it just takes that little bit of talent and know-how to get it to where it needs to be.
Yeah, this is a tale, oh yeah, a tale of two hygienists. So there might be only one bringing the best of dental knowledge, and we do it all with ease. We cover oral health and screening and preventing gum disease. We're gonna do a lot of learning and have a little bit of fun working at the dentist. A tale of two hygienists.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of A Tale of Two Hygienists, an Endeavor Business Media production. This is episode number 362, and I am your host, Andrew Johnston. Thank you for being here. We have an interesting lineup for you all today as we feature Elvis and Barb, and we talk a little bit about dental labs. And I know I alluded to this in the intro last week, but this is probably one of the most fascinating episodes I've done in a long time. And as we were talking, I could really pretty easily see myself pivoting into going down this career path if I didn't already, you know, choose some of the other ones and had awareness about it. It's absolutely fascinating. There's such a need in dental labs, a need for, I guess, just like every other place, employees. And there's definitely money to be made there. And they talk a little bit about that on the episode. And I think I've told you guys this story one time before, but one of my favorite doctors of all time, he was probably the most artistically minded doctor that I've ever worked with. And he was a lab tech for a long time. And then he went to dental school and became a dentist and just started producing some of those amazing dentistry I've ever seen. It's just, there's a special spot in my heart for people who work in labs, I think, because of this amazing doctor I worked with. Also, a special thank you to Teresa Duncan for being my co-host for the day. I love her point of view on so many things about how she sees the world. But also be sure to check out her podcasts, Nobody Told Me That, and Chew On This with Kevin Henry. They share some very fascinating insight. Probably not the best segue, but not the worst I've ever had. But we also have Teresa on her own episode coming out next week. So we had her on to answer a question that we received. You guys all remember that survey that you took? Well, we got some feedback and someone said, well, how do I get my claims paid? And so we thought we'd have her on to answer that. We also talk a little bit about some newer laws that are coming in to protect your patients from insurance companies, but it kind of is from insurance companies. And I think that you need to know about that because it really will have an impact on you and your office, specifically if you work in Massachusetts, but I think it's going to be coming to all states over the next several years. So make sure you don't miss that one. I also want to say thank you to everyone we met at Greater New York. It was just a few weeks ago. We'll definitely be having some newly met friends on the podcast in the new year that we're excited about. I had a meeting with the wonderful admins of the RDH Rant Facebook group, and we were collaborating about all sorts of different things. But I think ultimately we decided that we're going to go ahead and keep our partnership going with them, and they're going to keep bringing you guys a podcast episode every month. So I'm really thrilled about that. Very, very happy to have them on. So lots of really cool things happening in this new year. Please just stick with us. Hit that subscribe button so you guys don't miss any of this. But I think that's it for me this week. So please enjoy this episode with Elvis and Barb.
A tale of two hygienists.
Hey friends, quick pause in the show to remind you about the CE offered for several of our episodes. All you have to do is click into the show notes and follow the link to the CE Zoom website. Answer a few of those questions about the episode correctly and you'll be rewarded the appropriate amount of CEUs. This wouldn't be possible without a partnership with our friends at TempStars. TempStars is more than just a temp and a placement service. They are clinician-led and education-focused and strive to perfectly match individuals and dental offices. Learn more about TempStars.com or go back and listen to some of their tip episodes. They are absolutely worth the listen. And now, back to the show.
Welcome everyone into the interview portion of the podcast. Very happy to be here today. We're going to have a topic that I don't think in 350 plus episodes that we've ever talked about. We're going to be talking about the dental labs. And we have with us today two amazing podcasters, also professionals for the dental lab. So I'll have you guys introduce yourself, Elvis and Barb. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
So let's go into your guys' background a little bit. So Elvis, let's start with you. What are your qualifications for this?
Sure. None whatsoever is what I like to say. So about 15 years ago, I was slinging pizzas. I was making pizzas at a pretty popular chain called Mellow Mushroom. And I took a chance and answered an ad for a part-time packer. And in the laboratory space, that is somebody that basically when the work is done, we put it in the little bags, ship it out. And that's how I got started and everything. And I fell in love with the people and the processes and just everything about it. It was like my first like adult job. And and I just grew and I kept learning as much as I could. There was so much knowledge happening in that lab. And I eventually worked my way up to director of operations. By, you know, year 8 or 9, I was pretty much managing the place. Like I like to tell people, I owned it without owning it. The funny thing is I never really did any bench work. I've never really made a dental restoration from beginning to end. My goal is to make sure it got made. My goal was to make sure that I was able to communicate between the lab and that clinical staff. I got into sales for a little bit. I mean, I just did everything but the actual bench work. I mean, did I dabble in a lot of the working? Absolutely, I did. But that wasn't my goal. My goal was just running the lab. Mm-hmm. After about 13 years, my time was up. I partnered with a company called Preet, which sells implant components. So anything and locators, attachments, all of that. So I traveled the country. I spoke all over the country about overdenture parts and tie bases and abutments and things like that. Absolutely loved it. Travel was too much. Had to bring it back home. So now I'm with a lab out of, and I always say it wrong, Louisville, Kentucky. Louisville. Out of a lab called Derby Dental Lab. And great lab, great people doing wonderful things. And basically, I get to just be a customer service rep in the whole state of Indiana for them out of Kentucky. So my goal is just making sure that the clients that use Derby in Indiana are taken care of. And I absolutely love it now.
I love that.
There's your, 3 minute in a nutshell.
Yeah, that was really good.
Not scripted, but sounded like
for you.
Barb, how about you? Tell us your background.
So my dad founded Knight Dental. So I was born and raised in the dental laboratory, spent many weekends and many nights hanging out with my dad after I graduated from high school and didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. He directed me into the lab and I started as a driver and then a packer, just like Elvis, and opaquer. And then I moved my way up into ceramics. I've been a ceramist for 25 plus years. I'm a certified dental technician, and I'm also accredited with the Academy of Cosmetic Dentistry, which is a very regimented, judged thing that takes about 5 years to accomplish. So super happy with that. Right now, I'm running the high-end division here at Lexer, Tampa. We do all aesthetic cases with provisionals, diagnostics, anything, you know, 10 units up to an implant, single centrals. Really, really love what I do. I'm definitely on the bench all day, every day. And I never leave here hating it. I love clinicians. I love doctors and talking and treatment planning and just actually go in and see cases locally. So I just love it. So
sorry, yeah. As a side note, do you say Tampa, like Tampa, Florida?
Yeah.
Do you know I'm in Tampa?
No.
Buddy, high five.
I thought you were in Washington State.
I moved. I took a director of hygiene job down here.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
Holy culture.
Well, I'm in Land O'Lakes, so I'm a little bit north, but
you should come check out the lab. You'd love it.
I absolutely will.
Seriously.
Okay. So the podcast, Voices from the Bench, has over 240 episodes we just talked about.
Yeah.
The rare 5-star rating with over 40 ratings. So one, I would like to know, how did you guys come together for podcasting, but also how did you achieve 5-star ratings? Since this is a very fickle audience that we have in dentistry.
I didn't even know we had a 5-star rating. Elvis, did you?
Yeah, I did. I didn't want to jinx it.
Sorry.
Well, it's Elvis' brainchild, so I'll
let you. I just need one hater.
Exactly.
So the podcast came about, and I know the podcast I'm about to mention had a lot of influence with you, Andrew, but the Dental Hacks.
Yes.
When I started doing sales for my original lab, you know, I was starting to get out on the road, go visit offices. And my thought was, hey, I want to listen to what's going on clinically to better understand, easier to talk to. And I listen, you know, there's tons of dentist podcasts. I mean, the market is huge. And I just happened to stumble upon that one. And it just resonated. The dynamic, the two people from two different type of businesses, from two different parts of the country, just chit-chatting and talking with people in the industry. Mm. And they talked to a gentleman that's in our industry called Mark Jackson years ago. Sadly, he's since passed. But listening to that episode made me say, why is there not a podcast for us? Why are we not doing one? And I originally took this idea to our national board, which Barb was on the board of, and I was on the board, to do it as like a board kind of thing, you know, where mm-hmm. the board would present the podcast. But somebody very smartly said to me, yeah, you want to be careful because with the board, you got to do president every year. Someone might not like what you're doing mm-hmm. and this and that. So I was like, all right, let's just give this a shot. I knew Barb from the board, from various meetings. Her personality is my yin to my yang. Honestly, I thought it was going to be hard to find guests. And I know Barb knew a lot of people and she was in the industry for a long time.
He was using me.
Yes.
We've all done that before, I'm sure.
And I just like to say real quick, when he asked me, I didn't even know what the hell a podcast was. I didn't even know what the heck a podcast was. I'm sorry. And he asked me and I was like, yeah, why not? So
why not?
It was an easy guess for me. We got along so well and I thought I'll give it a shot. So
I don't think she realized the hours that would be put into it on such a regular basis.
Yeah.
Because we're very proud to say that for 241 weeks, we have never missed a release week.
It's incredible.
This is something with laboratories that's drilled into our head, consistency and making a date.
Yeah.
You got to do it.
Yeah.
And man, no matter what happens, we have an episode every Monday morning and we have not dropped that yet.
That's incredible. Oh my gosh.
That's how it started. We just talked to a friend of ours, mutual, and said, will you be our first episode? And we just went with it and it just never stopped.
And we weren't very good. That's for sure.
No, it was terrible.
It got a lot better.
Who was it though? Like,
it took a while.
Yeah, it does.
I wrote a whole script for us. I mean, like what she says and I'll say and she says and I'll say. And yeah, that's how nervous.
Elvis, how did you have time for that?
I don't anymore.
Oh my goodness. Well, it's a little bit, I mean, I don't know if my listeners really care about you know, the behind the scenes of podcasting very much, but I'll tell you, scripted podcasts and dentistry do not go over very well.
No.
Right? They want that that authenticity.
Yeah. So. Now we just go at it. We don't even come up with questions or anything. We just I want to learn along with the listener.
I like that. So let's talk about our audience is largely hygiene.
Yep.
Do you feel like they could get some stuff out of your podcast? What could they get from it?
I think they can. And I'm just going to jump in, Barb, that when I go to offices to talk about whatever lab I'm representing, I can't tell you how many times, you know, I bring in food or something and how many times they usually go, I'm just a hygienist. It doesn't matter. Or, I'm the hygienist. You don't need to really worry about me. And I disagree. I think what we do in a lab plays a huge part on what a hygienist is going to see. And I know most patients get along with their hygienist better. They spend more time with their hygienist. And these are the people that are going to open up about what possible restoration could be done with this patient. I know even myself personally, I love the hygienist, but here comes the doctor. He's like the Darth Vader of the office who's like, this is what's wrong and this is what's going to cost. But my hygienist, I'll tell all day long what I want done. You know, and I think that's a disconnect that I see going into an office. Mm-hmm.
I would love for hygienists to embrace the idea of learning something that's not quite, you know, in their lane, so to speak. Because everything really could be in a hygienist lane if they embrace it, if they choose to, if they want to add to the value of the practice, if they want to make things run smoothly. Let me ask this, though. What are some common mistakes that you guys are seeing at the lab that maybe it's not just hygienists, maybe it's also dental assistants, maybe it's just anyone that's maybe even a doctor that could easily be prevented that a hygienist should know about?
What instantly jumps to mind are patients that are fully edentulous and dentures, and they don't maintain them. But one of their goals is to get into like a fixed hybrid. One of the biggest, I think, misunderstandings about full arch fixed hybrids is the amount of hygiene it takes to maintain them. A lot of people get these devices and they instantly think, I'm done with the dentist. I don't need to like even brush the teeth anymore. They're not real, but it's the opposite. It takes more care. So if you have a patient that has a denture and they're not even taking care of something that comes out, they're not going to be very compatible for something that stays in.
That's a good point. That's and a very
I think
good
a lot.
Point.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it's big in the industry right now. Every lab is doing a ton of fixed full arch cases and people are selling them. And we're starting to see a slight trend where they're, these patients probably shouldn't have been putting them because their hygiene is so bad. And you're starting to see some implant issues. You're starting to see a lot of problems, and then they're being switched to removable back to removable because they can't maintain them. So why go through the expense? Why go through all the problem? If you can see it up front that there's going to be an hygiene issue, let's not force them into dropping all that money and spending all that time.
Great point.
So from the front's point of view, the admin point of view, it would be really easy to send a reminder to those patients that have those issues. Like say you put on this huge, you know, 6-7 unit case, it would be really easy to send a reminder to those patients with maybe a video on how to take care of that, or a reminder of, you know, hey, just checking in on you and how are you doing with care for your new smile. That would be, I think, a good way to stay in front of the patient, remind them that, hey, they made this big investment. Let's take care of it.
Yeah, I would say definitely.
Can I ask Barb about that? So is there something coming down from, I guess, from a national level or maybe international level? Are there specific instructions that can be given to the patient that are across the board? This is what we recommend. Or is it kind of lab specific and material specific?
I think it's lab specific as well as material specific. I think it comes down to the communication with the laboratory and the doctor and the hygienist to all come together on how to treat the appliance once it's in the patient's mouth. So just like Elvis said, with your denture, you know, you've got all of these devices, you've got, you know, night guards, you've got splints, you've got dentures, you've got implants, and then each one of them has to be handled differently. So I think it comes down to the partnership of all three.
So
If I'm in a practice, and I know that this happens, but I don't think in how many years has it been? 14 years. I don't think I've ever had anyone from a lab do a lunch and learn for any of my offices I've ever been in. So how common is that, first of all? And then how do we request that?
For us, it's extremely common. We've got a sales team of about 17, I think, because we're national, but that's how we get our foot in the door. I mean, for the most part, you know, you've got lists of clients in the neighborhood, either Heartland, Aspen, or retail. You know, they go out to them, see if they can get a foot in the door. And that's exactly what we do. We bring in lunch. We've got a PowerPoint. We talk about all of the features and all of the products that the laboratory has, how to connect to us, how to fill out a proper RX, and, you know, what your specifications are for your laboratory. Do you like tight contacts? Do you like your occlusion centric or out of occlusion? And all of these things are implemented right away. So most of the time, you said, how could a doc find out? I think doctors talk to each other a lot. And most it's like, how do you like your lab? And if you like your lab, then you know, you get a referral, you call the lab and you set it up.
So Barb, I heard you mention the larger companies, the larger group practices, the smaller offices. I know it may not be as cost effective, but is there a way to reach out to them? How do you market to that segment?
We actually have like a retail sales force. It's probably three or four that are geared only to the smaller practices, the Florida Academy of Cosmetic Dentistry, the AACD, any of those that we can get lists from. They'll take those lists. They have territories and they try to set those up.
And let's remember, you know, Barb's from a pretty large lab group. How many of those are six in the group or?
Yeah,
there's six labs all over the country. I mean, it's a pretty good sized group, but a majority of our industry is made up of smaller labs. There's a lot of great, great labs out there with one person, three people, eight people, 30 people. The lab I'm at's around 60. Barb's alone. Are you over 100?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just you get those different scopes of labs. Yeah. So don't discredit that three-person lab that probably doesn't have a sales force, but at the same time would love an opportunity to work with you. They don't come in with a PowerPoint. They don't come in with the schmancy, you know, all the frills, but there's nothing wrong with them. They just don't have that ability. Now, like I do quite a few lunch and learns because we're a 60-person lab. All you got to do is ask, really. Mm-hmm. And most labs would love an opportunity just to showcase what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But you also got to remember, what are you looking for at the lab? Are you looking just to see what their crowns look like? I guarantee they're going to be good. No one's out there making
fails. Yeah.
Yeah. No one's out there making terrible crowns. You know, what are you looking for in a lab? Are you looking for more hands-on, someone that's going to be able to come in and help chair side? Are you looking for someone that's just easy to communicate with? Are you looking for a lab that you're able to see all your statistics on their end and see lab invoices and stuff like that? It's easy to go into a lunch and learn and just, I could bring you models to the days, to the end of the time, and just show you night guards and dentures and everything. But really, what are you looking for in a lab? Mm-hmm. That's how you should choose your lab. Because no one's going to go out there and say, hey, look at this terrible denture I make, buy it, you know?
Of course not.
What do you need? Do you need someone that's going to hold your hand through every removable case? Mm-hmm. Some offices need that, and that's fine. Just only certain labs can provide that.
From an admin point of view, one of the biggest issues that can, because we're always in the doctor's ear, like if a lab is really hard to work with, you know, really,
sure.
you want to call them again, really, don't you want this lab slip, you know, so it's definitely easy for us to do that. However, I mean, it shouldn't be. But as far as what we would like, I mean, just really a regular point of contact and to get, you know, calls return, text return, that type of thing. It really is amazing that that doesn't happen as often as it could. But it would be nice if we knew what we're doing wrong as well. I mean, Andrew asked on the hygiene side, you know, what could they do better? What could admin do better?
I could tell you this from my perspective, I'm a texter. So anytime I get involved, whether, you know, on a case, I give my cell phone out immediately and all of my clients text me, they'll text me pictures, RXs, questions, due dates, you name it. So even though we're a large lab, I still have a very tight connection with the admin. So that's what I would do. I would call the lab and say, listen, these are the type of cases I'm working on. Do you have a technical advisor that I can work with? And then you get in touch with them, you get their cell, you get their email, and that's who you use. You don't just call in and get a switchboard and try to figure out who you want. And if the lab's, you know, decent, they've got a fair amount of folks there that will be technical communicators. And everybody at our lab gives out their cells. And they'll text me and say, hey, can you talk at one or can you talk now? And I'm always like, yep, no matter what I'm doing, I drop what I'm doing. And I text right back. And that's why I like texting, because it's right in front of my face. Mm-hmm. And even if I'm working on a case, I can immediately reply. So I'm finding that most everybody likes to text now. So I would just say, call, get a number, get a person, and just go through them.
Excellent. Love it.
I got to mention probably the biggest disconnect between offices and labs on both ends are delivery dates.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be the number one problem. And it starts from either the office not knowing how much time we need or the office not telling us when they need it. The biggest problem is we'll get a script in, which is what you fill out for the lab as the prescription, and there's no date on it.
Yeah.
Because in your mind, you're saying just do your normal time. In a lab, if there's no date on it, it to us means you don't have the patient scheduled. We're going to do it in our normal time.
Yeah.
But if I get behind, guess which one gets pushed a little bit more? The one that doesn't have a date.
Yep.
You would think, oh, but you said you need 6 days. We do, or whatever it is. Every lab's different. Yep. You need 6 days. Why don't I get it back in 6 days? Well, three people called in sick, whatever. My mill went down. Same problems that happen in the clinical side. So if you don't have a date, we're gonna give us that extra day on that one because we don't have to call. That's probably, to me, the biggest disconnect. Just put a date on it. I don't even care if it's not even our amount of time, put a date on it, because then at least we'll call and tell you what day you're going to get it. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to adhere to that date no matter what.
The whole rush culture too was.
Don't.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when I was in office, we've used that sparingly. It was only for like cases where it was going to be a disaster if we couldn't do it. And our labs were always very happy to work with us. But
yeah,
we were low maintenance, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's what I really kind of miss, though, is the local lab hand delivering me the case, like walking in, the wife delivers the case, the kids deliver the case when they get old enough. And and that was just, you know, we knew our lab people and then slowly start to close down. And the lab guy that I kind of grew up with, I guess you could say, you know, I ran into him at the airport. He was working at the airport last I saw him. And that was 20 some years of owning his own practice. It was really kind of just jarring. Is that the whole thing about one lab for crowns, one lab for removables, is that still going on in the industry or has it pretty much been seen to consolidate?
It's happening.
Oh, yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
It's still pretty common knowledge that every clinician uses about 3 to 4 labs currently. And by no means does any lab think I'm going to go in there and get all their business. Mm-hmm. People use who they like. Just cross-selling, we try all the time. I mean, that's how we grow business. But we understand some labs are just better with the clinician for different items. I mean, in all the years, no matter how hard you try, there's always going to be a clinician and a lab that just doesn't work together. Not like an emotional thing, but for some reason, we just can't get the context. I don't know why. It doesn't make any sense. Everything's calibrated and checked and double checked, and we have conversations. I do chairs. It just doesn't work. And you have to understand that as a lab, and I think as a clinician, that sometimes it just doesn't work. Mm. And it's okay. Go to another lab. If it fixes itself, great. I'm glad that connection is made. I'm glad patients are getting serviced. But I mean, over my years, there are so many clinicians. I'm not going to say a lot because that sounds bad, but there's a handful that no matter what we did, it just didn't work. And I'm sure you see it too, Barb.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, you know, it might be controversial, but the removable technicians and the removable laboratories in the United States are condensing and aging out. And, you know, I think it'd be prudent for us to tell you a lot of the removables go offshore. So just, you know, for you guys' knowledge, you know, you go to a big laboratory, it gets scary where the heck they go, how long it takes, what you get back, mm-hmm. you know, so just remember that, you know, that's one of the things I think that we're hurting on as an industry is in the removable area.
Now, I would assume that's for cost purposes, right? That they're trying to control, you know, their own costs, so they ship it offshore. Yeah. I mean, is there something, okay, so let's say that I'm a practice that I don't want my product going overseas. I want them to be, you know, delivered in 6 days because the shipping times overseas can take longer than that and all of that. You know, how can I control my costs, but also have good local product?
That's a good question.
You want it good, fast, or cheap?
Yeah,
honestly. It's that classic thing, you know.
I think it's the look the other way, you know, and go like this. And, you know, it just...
There's a lab for every type of clinician.
Yeah.
There's going to be clinics out there that want cheap. Mm. And I get it because their clientele, their patient base can't afford it. Mm. And that's just the nature of it. And unfortunately, the easiest way to do that is offshore. We've countered a lot of that with the zirconia. So before zirconia, you know, PFM was it. Metal was expensive, took a lot of talent to stack porcelain. But with zirconia, we're able to scale to a point where we can kind of compete with those prices. And I think we've gotten better over the years competing with offshoring. And we've seen a big dip in that. With removables going over, that's more of, we don't have people that can make an analog removable as much as we used to. It's one of these things that in the 90s, aesthetic fixed cases were all the rage, and everybody wanted to be a ceramist, and which was great for the time. But now we're looking at a time where we don't have a lot of removable technicians. And the ones we do, someone famously told me the average age of a denture technician is dead. It's terrible. There's a lot of really young, great removable technicians out there. But to fill in for the population that's aging, that's losing their teeth, we can't keep up. Yeah. There's just no way to do it. So luckily, here comes digital. Digital's coming in and it's getting real good for dentures. So I think this offshoring is going to come back just like it did with zirconia, with being done more here in the States, but done differently with different materials, like a digital denture.
Yeah. Interesting.
So with that, so you don't necessarily need somebody with the tactical skills. You really just need someone that understands the physics of it all. And
exactly. Okay. You're now, you need less hands-on. You can do more at once. You know, computers and AI is just getting amazing. That it's, a lot of it is getting to a point where it's giving you a really decent mock-up. And it just takes that little bit of talent and know-how to get it to where it needs to be. And it's getting there.
I was just thinking, we had a hygienist once and she really didn't like patients. And I mean, I can understand. So she didn't like them. And she was really good with, you know, diagnosing, actually. She was a very good co-diagnoser with the doctor. I was just thinking, man, she would be amazing at sitting and doing this stuff because she understood all of that. And she wouldn't have to talk to anybody. She'd be really happy. So might have to let her know this is a thing for her now.
So like so many industries, we have a hard time finding people. Mm-hmm. We have a hard time finding people that can understand what we do. And a biggest pull probably right now is clinical. You get those people that are assistants or hygienists that...
Yes.
Hey, here you get to lab. Yeah, you get to stay in the dental field. Mm-hmm. You don't have to put up with patients. And you don't have to put your fingers in people's mouths and all this kind of stuff. Which
is it pay though? Because I, you know, obviously
no.
Dentistry is having this issue with assistants. yeah, and other positions. And a lot of it is doctors going, I can't afford to do that. Yeah. You know? So it's not pay. What is it? Just awareness? What is it that's holding your industry back from getting flooded with talent?
It's pretty much awareness, I would say. We're the ugly stepchildren to dentistry. People don't know about us. Every patient thinks their dentist made their crown. They don't. True. They don't get it. They don't see us. Doctors don't announce that someone else made this or it came from this lab. Our national association's doing a big push on just getting the knowledge out that we exist, that we're a good place to go. You can make decent money. It takes work. You know, you're not going to walk into our industry making a ton of money, but if you stick with it and you got the push to do more, you can have a pretty good lifestyle.
Yeah.
And it's probably one of the easiest businesses to start on your own. Mm. I think. I mean, it's expensive with all the digital, but if you know how to do it, there's nothing stopping you. There's no law saying, well, some states, like in Indiana, anybody can open up a dental lab.
Same with Florida.
Which is good and bad.
Yeah. It is
good and bad.
It's weird. You know, you need no license. You need nothing to make a medical device to replace a body part.
True. Yeah. Wild. That's so weird.
But Barb, you said really quickly that it wasn't pay. Was there something else that popped into your mind?
Oh, I was saying we don't pay them, basically, at first. Like the hygienists or front office people that come to our laboratory probably would make less, is what I was thinking. Yeah, it does take a while. I don't disagree with Elvis. If you stick with it, it's a very lucrative career, but it probably takes 3 or 4 or 5 years to start making what you probably would have made at the doctor's office.
Awesome. Hey, I think that's a really good place to end on. I want our hygienist audience and our doctors who are listening as well to find your podcast, listen to you both. This has been really enlightening. If there's a specific question that they have for either one of you, how can they contact you?
Oh, super easy. The Voices from the Bench. We're on all the social medias. I'm not going to say I spend too much time on it, but I do. And you can always send us an email, super easy, info@voicesfromthebench.com. And I mean, we're happy to talk to you. If you want to address our industry, we're always looking for good guests. As long as you have something to do with dental, we don't care. You know, if you check out our podcast, not every episode's about everybody. We cover the gambit. You know, we talk to insurance companies with the, you know, that might not interest your bench worker, but we talk to that one technician. That made
glass eyes.
Yep. Somebody that made eyes just because we thought it was an interesting. We've talked to a guy that does tattoos of teeth.
Yeah.
But we talked to the one technician working out of their garage all the way up to Jim Glidewell and everywhere in between, you know. We just cover the industry. So if you do check us out, hopefully more than one episode.
Yeah, so skip up to at least 50 and then listen.
Don't discount the old guests.
I'm just kidding.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is a tale, oh yeah. A tale of two hygienists. So there might be only one bringing the best of dental knowledge, and we do it all with ease. We cover oral health and screening and preventing gum disease. We're gonna do a lot of learning and have a little bit of fun working at the dentist. A tale of two hygienists.